The Old Testament clearly states that the way to peace is through reliance on God as an outside power. Giving up trust in God and looking instead to yourself could be very dangerous. It could also be heresy. A few clues indicate that I can risk a different approach, however. In the Bible, one finds such verses as, "Seek ye the kingdom of heaven within," and the means of going inward, chiefly meditation and silent contemplation, are not that far removed from prayer. A biological response lies behind restful awareness, no matter what faith we clothe it in. In the Hindu tradition, going inward begins a spiritual quest that will eventually end in enlightenment. The spiritual properties of mantras, a word repeated mentally while breathing slowly in and out, have two bases. Some orthodox Hindus would say that every mantra is a version of God's name, while others would claim, and this is very close to quantum physics, that the vibration of the mantra is the key, the frequency of brain activity in the cerebral cortex. The mantra forms a feedback loop as the brain produces the sound, listens to it, and then responds with a deeper level of attention. A person could use any of the five senses to enter this feedback loop. The whole intent is to go past the senses in order to find their source. In all cases, the source is a finer state of brain activity. The theory is that mental activity contains its own mechanism for becoming more and more refined until complete silence is experienced. At that point, one's awareness crosses the quantum boundary. The material plane has been left behind. We are now in the region where spiritual activity commands its own laws. The argument persists that a brain learning to calm down may be comforting, but it isn't spiritual. There really is no fundamental disagreement going on. The cerebral cortex produces thought by using energy in the form of photons. Their interaction takes place on the quantum level, which means that every thought could be traced back to its source at a deeper level. No spiritual thoughts stand apart on their own. We are kept on the material level because our attention is pulled outward rather than inward. There is no doubt that people resist the whole notion of God being an inner phenomenon. The vast majority of the world's faithful are firmly committed to stages 1 and 2, believing in a God up there, outside ourselves. Yet its importance is eloquently stated in the medieval document known as the Cloud of Unknowing, written anonymously in the 14th century. The author tells us that God, the angels, and all the saints take greatest delight when a person begins to do inner work. However, none of this is apparent at first. God has no presence, emotionally or intellectually. The cloud of unknowing is all we have to go on. The only solution, the writer informs us, is perseverance. We are advised to go into a cloud of forgetting about anything other than the silence of the inner world. This makes perfect sense once we realize that the restful awareness response, which contains no thoughts, is being advocated. The step the writer took was a brave one under the weight of priests, cathedrals, and church laws. But it would be a brave step today as well, because people want a God they can see and touch and talk to. Consider how radical the argument really is, as revealed in the next section of the book. In this work, it profits little or nothing to think upon the worthiness of God, or upon the saints and angels in heaven. It is far better to think upon the naked being of God. This naked being is awareness without content, pure spirit. As with any stage, this is one you enter, then explore. It can be a bleak place at first, marked by loss of all the rituals and comforts of organized faith. Our anonymous writer emphasizes over and over that delight and love will eventually arise out of silence. The inner work is done for only one purpose, to feel the love of God, and there is no other way to achieve it. Every stage of inner growth is a hard one. A clash of values confronts everyone on the threshold of stage 3. Good is measured by remaining centered in the self, which brings clarity and calm. Evil is measured by disturbance to that clarity. It brings confusion, chaos, and inability to see the truth. 50 years ago, the sociologist David Reisman noted that the vast majority are outer-directed and the small minority inner-directed. Outer direction comes from what others think of you. You crave approval and bend to the needs of conformity. Inner direction is rooted in a stable self that cannot be shaken. An inner-directed person is free of the need for approval, making it much easier for him to question prevailing opinions. Being inner-directed doesn't make you religious, but the religion of the inner-directed is stage 3. Jesus wanted his disciples to be in the world, but not of it. He wanted them to be both detached and engaged. Detached in the sense that no one could grab their souls. Engaged in the sense that they remained motivated to lead a worthy life. This is the balancing act of stage 3, and many people find it hard to manage. This is how the writer of The Cloud of Unknowing describes spiritual work. Who is it that calls it nothing? Surely it is our outer man and not our inner. Our inner man calls it all, for it teaches him to understand all things, bodily or spiritual, without any special knowledge of one thing in itself. This is a remarkable description of how silence works. Those who achieve inner silence are also thinking in the ordinary way, but the thought takes place against a background of non-thought. The mind is full of a kind of knowing that could speak to us about everything, yet it has no words. Therefore, we seek this knowingness in the background. If you keep to your plan, rejecting outward answers over and over, eventually your seeking bears fruit. During this whole time, your work inside is private, but outer existence has to go on. Thus, the balancing act Jesus referred to as being in the world, but not of it. Or as we are stating it, being detached and engaged at the same time.